Hour number two here on a Tuesday afternoon. Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com. Get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. A couple minutes away from an NFL no huddle as week seven is now in the books. We're on to Tampa. Now we can actually be on to Tampa now that they've
played. Today's the day?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm still not. Like, we're still going to do, like, we got Raheem Morris telling us why the pass rush wasn't actually so bad.
We're on to Tampa about midway through the second quarter.
Yeah, so. Well, all the guys were on to Tampa post-game on Sunday, that's for sure. It seems like a lot of the reporters were, too, because a lot of the questions were about it. They were like, yeah, you know, I guess we lost the Seahawks. But you know what we really want to talk about is this next game. Like, no, I'm talking about what the hell happened on you guys don't want to? All right. Anyway, we'll let you hear from Raheem. We'll get back into that just a little bit, and we will start looking ahead. Tampa suffered some very serious injuries to some very important players last night on Monday Night Football. We'll get back into a college football conversation at 12:20, coming out of what was a really incredible week. You were just giving me some of the numbers from the ratings for the broadcast on Saturday. 10 million or so were watching Alabama, Tennessee.
Yeah.
That rolled right into Georgia and Texas on the same network, right?
Yeah.
That was on the same
ABC
channel.
Yeah.
Georgia, Tennessee topped out at like 13 million something or other. Just a huge win on Saturday for that company. I know all of us watched it and most people listening watched it too, but yeah, that's why broadcast rights for college and pro football continue to break records every single time the contract negotiations are up. I know we're talking about the NBA season starting tonight. Will there be one game this NBA season that gets half as many viewers as the Georgia-Texas game got on Saturday night?
So here's my thing. It has to be an afternoon. It has to be a weekend afternoon.
It'll be Christmas.
Who's it got? Like,
it'll be Christmas.
It should be LeBron and it should be the Lakers Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that would be the game that would draw for me, Wemby and LeBron.
Mm-hmm. You got the Lakers Knicks, or sorry, Spurs Knicks
on
Christmas.
No, no one on
76ers Celtics, Lakers Warriors, and then Nuggets Suns. So the answer is probably no.
No.
Like, and I'm saying just half. Like, you're just asking for half. Problem is, the NFL is now colonized Christmas, too. They're like, now we're taking that also. Like,
But those are all, what, Netflix games? And they're still going to outdraw the NBA Netflix?
Probably. I remember because it was it last year or the year before that they had, because Christmas was Sunday, right? So the NFL had claim to it, and they put a couple games on it.
Yeah.
And, like, whatever the lowest rated game was that they had that day of the three games that they played had more viewers than all of the five NBA games combined.
Yeah, remember they had the Nickelodeon game and even that drew like 3 million?
Yeah.
You're like, I don't know, man.
And again, I don't care. I don't get any money from these games being broadcast. We're still going to talk a ton of NBA because we love the NBA on this show. But it's just food for thought. And, you know, it sort of explains, if you're ever wondering why you might be watching like a national show on TV, like some of the hot take shows, why do they only talk about this? Well, that's why. Right there. That's the reason why.
Yeah.
From a ratings perspective.
I to get ready for the NBA season, not that I like needed to get ready, but I did go back and watch Steph Curry in the Olympics, like against Serbia.
Yeah.
Just a treat of a couple minutes.
Just unbelievable performance. And I was out that next week, so I didn't get to talk about it at all. Like, Steph Curry just turning into Captain America.
It was.
And winning that game was
wild
to watch. Wild.
It was still wild to kind of relive now.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It's also just funny. It's just goofy.
Oh,
like it's funny because there's just, you got the best players in the world, and there's, when he gets on one, there's just nothing anyone can do.
No,
there's no level of defense. There's no, doesn't matter.
He's one of those guys that when he's on a heater, all you can do is just laugh. It's like, no way. He's not shooting a fadeaway. He just, like, crossover, behind the back, step back from 30 feet, bottom.
Well, because
like,
one begets the other, right? Like, now you're on a heat check. But the problem for, like, Steph heat checking is he makes his heat check, and then he gets another heat check.
If you can remember, if you can rack your brain, because I think that's a very specific type of performance from a great athlete.
Right.
What's the most just, like serious belly laugh you've ever had off of an athlete doing something in a moment like that? Because I know mine. It was Steph. It was when Steph pulled up, like, from half court to beat the Thunder in that game.
Dame's had a couple of those,
very
too.
Closely by the Dame Lillard one,
yeah.
Also against the Thunder, where he just, like, Paul George wouldn't even respect it post-game. He was like, nah, it's a bad shot. It's like, oh, you guys are going home, and the Blazers are on to the next round, and Dame put it.
Anyway. I'm going to be honest, like, the Solaire ball was a belly laugh,
yeah.
Because it was, it was so, like, So many home runs are like third row.
Right. That one was,
and it was so far.
And he slammed his bat and hit his chest. And everyone remembers that moment. When Mike Vick made those two Vikings run into each other, I laughed for
it. Was pretty good.
I laughed for 20 minutes.
It was pretty good.
Like, that was, I mean, come on. Like, this guy's a superhero.
Does Marcus Mariota throwing the ball into no man's land count? I mean, for different reasons?
When Randy asked Marcus Mariota if the Ducks could cover the spread, and because the problem with this medium is only I got to see his face. The look on Marcus Mariota's face when Randy asked him that question, that's why it was funny. It was so good. It was so, so good. And to this day, Randy still is like, he's like, what do you mean? Like, I know.
You know
that's
what used
to
get me laughing?
That's the best part.
Like that back in the day was like high school mixtapes or high school, like back in the day, but like almost
Allen
before
Iverson's
Huddle.
High school football tape.
The football one's always, but like you had like, the guys that turned into nothing, right?
Or like the Randy Moss Marshall highlights where he's just hurtling dudes and like returning punts and doing all
like
that kind of stuff.
Noel Devine, high school mixtape superstar.
Yeah, man.
Was it Sam McGuffey?
Meanwhile, Derrick Henry has that, but it's the NFL.
Just all
it's just his NFL highlights. They're the same thing. All right, let's get to an NFL No Huddle. NFL No Huddle every day to lead the noon hour. This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com, get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. Week 7 in the books, Falcons 4-3 through 7 games. Here's Raheem Morris talking about taking some positives out of the pass rush against the Seahawks.
It's both.
Yeah.
You know, you wanted to get them on the ground, but it is definitely positive improvement by those guys. I believe yesterday we had the one sack by JSW. Mm-hmm. He made it a great move and great power rush. We had another, which you thought it was a sack at the time, when you get the fumble snap, muff snap out the backfield, and Rook made a really good rush and got around there and got a chance to touch him down. And then we had the intentional grounding with Damone getting elevated yesterday, making a play for us on that edge, being able to cause some stuff like nature. And then the hurries and all the stuff that was happening with Grady and some of the interior guys was really positive. It was really trending in a positive direction. And we just got to improve on that performance and get it better every single week.
I hope that they do. All of the stuff that he mentioned certainly happened. I don't know that the trend is in the right direction, but all the individual instances that he recounted there certainly did happen. I thought the Rook one was a sack. I don't know why that doesn't count as one. Fumble, whatever, you touch
the
guy
they
down.
They decide to use the term abort all the time, and like the quarterback aborts the play, and
got
so
it.
Now it's a fumble, and it's
like,
not a, it's
you
a
remember,
tackle for loss.
Maybe this is a new thing, but like, guys would just run out of bounds behind
they got
the
rid
line
of that.
Of scrimmage, and it used to be a sack, and now it's
now
not.
Now they're declared runners
got
at
it.
That point. So it's a tackle for loss, but not a sack.
Yeah. What's funny is sacks are tackles for loss.
Yes.
But not all tackles for loss are sacks.
Is this a square rectangle situation?
I guess so. I just think a sack shouldn't also count for a tackle for loss, because at the end of the game, like, a guy will have a great game, and then they'll tweet out his sacks and he'll be or his stats, and they'll be like, he had 3 sacks and 4 tackles for loss. It's like, well, he had...
So you want 3 sacks and 1 additional
sacks.
Tackle for loss is what you want to go with?
And 1 additional tackle for loss, because all 3 of those sacks were also tackles for loss. I just feel like, can it be 2 things? Can one thing be 2 stats? I guess it can, because they give him credit for 2 stats.
Well, a hit and a home run are 1 stat.
That's true. It's a good point. Too good of a point. I don't like it. I'm going to move on.
3-pointer is also a field goal made.
That's true. Here's Todd Bowles, the head coach of the Tampa Bay Bucks, talking about Chris Godwin's injury.
He got an ankle, early indication that it's dislocated. We'll see. Doesn't look good.
The immediate.
He sounded
the
very
immediate
sad.
Indication was that it was dislocated.
Yeah, no, we saw it. The immediate indication was that we saw it, and it was disgusting. And
I did not see it.
I saw it.
I saw it on Twitter. I was hoping no one on my timeline. I don't like looking at those sorts of things. And so when Aikman mentioned that their truck is advising not to replay it, I always appreciate that. And I'm not like super squeamish, but I also don't enjoy watching those.
Yeah.
Like, as much MMA as I watch, you would think I'd be a little more, I don't enjoy watching those sorts of injuries.
Uh-huh. I don't either.
You cut a guy over the eyebrow, fine, whatever. But like that stuff, I was really appreciative that they didn't show it.
The bottom line is he's out for the remainder of the season.
Oh, yeah.
Mike Evans out as well. So with the Falcons getting ready to take on the Bucks this weekend, they're out their top 2 wide receivers. Certainly advantageous for the Atlanta Falcons, no doubt about it. We'll get back into some of these other NFL stories in the 1 o'clock hour as Tua Tagovailoa spoke. He's expected to return.
I already took that line.
You did?
Yeah.
What is it?
3 or 2.5 or something?
Who do they got?
Cardinals at home?
Interesting. All right.
I reserve the right to change it later.
Of course you can. You can do whatever you want. We'll come back and get into a college football conversation coming out of last weekend. I think if there was any doubt, there shouldn't have been, but if there was any doubt that you were going to not trust Kirby Smart in a big moment like that, squashed once again by the best coach in college football, where's your trust meter on some of these other guys? I told you where mine was on Sark last week, and then he showed you why on Saturday night. We'll get Dan Lanning in the mix, Ryan Day, James Franklin.
This is not a good list.
Mario Cristobal. I think you have to. We have to specify what we mean and when we trust him. We'll get into it next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, midday show with Andy and Randy with you here. Abe Gordon filling in for Randy all week long, 20 minutes away from the back page with Bo. Get back into the big story of the day, top of the 1 o'clock hour. Brandon Adams at 1:20 to talk some Georgia Bulldogs. I know he's very happy about what happened on Saturday night, for sure. He's been talking about it since then, but we'll get his thoughts on what all went into that game, what the aftermath sort of looks like and means, and start looking ahead because next up is Florida. So
coming for you.
Cocktail party. Even you don't believe that.
I'm going to be there. I'm going there to watch Florida play.
Yep.
Not win, but play.
Yeah, you'll be there. You're going on a cruise, and then after the cruise, you'll go, right?
Yeah, the day we step off the boat is okay. The day they kick off.
Great. That'll be a lot of fun. Have you been to that game before?
I have, yes.
Okay.
Florida was a lot better back then.
Okay.
I saw the Tebow Stafford era cocktail party.
Yeah, yeah. Those were harder times for Georgia fans. Times are better now. As we sort of transition into this head coaches in college football conversation, your answer there or your tone as it relates to Florida, I think has a lot of relevance in the conversation that we're about to have. About college football coaches and the trust meter, because I think it depends on who you ask, and I think it depends on what you're asking as it relates to which coaches in college football you trust the most. After Saturday, and probably before Saturday, but certainly after Saturday, I think the answer from the general college football fan, wherever you wanted to ask them anywhere in the country, is going to be very similar to the answer from a Georgia Bulldogs fan as far as where your trust level is in Kirby Smart. I think everyone's on the same page on that one, right?
Well,
Kirby is... Well, no? Okay.
I have some questions that can maybe just clear up my question.
Okay.
I don't necessarily... Kirby... Obviously, on the whole of the job, he's an outstanding recruiter. I think they develop players that they recruit to high levels. That's why you see the NFL stuff. I think they have a better roster and better talent than everyone else.
I think for the most part.
Yeah.
But I think you start getting into 3 and 4 and 5 different schools that might.
Right.
You can but here's the thing. That wasn't what the conversation was on Friday. After Georgia went out there and did what they did on Saturday night, now everyone's like, oh, yeah, they're more talented. On Friday, it was Texas is better in the trenches. Texas has a better wide receiving core. Texas has maybe a better quarterback.
That? We didn't say that.
I didn't say that.
I didn't say that.
No, I said Texas has been better in the trenches, and I said they might be better in the trenches. I said I don't expect them to be because I think Georgia is going to show up to this game with their hair on fire, and they did. But
my caveat for Kirby is how good of an in-game manager? Like, it's tough.
I think he's significantly better than he was.
I think there was
moments early on where sometimes the emotion would get the better of him and he would make a decision that he might not otherwise make.
Okay, but what was that squib kick there?
I don't see. Yeah, that was weird. I don't know what that
and
was.
And I only asked because...
Did anybody ask about that after the game, by the way? Because I never got an answer on what that was. I don't know if that was an accident. I don't know. Obviously, you weren't trying to hit the guy in the foot. It hit the guy in the foot and ended up being around midfield. If it squibs and goes to the...
Right.
Goes to where it was going to go.
Yeah,
it's
maybe
a little bit different. Yeah, but that was a weird decision. But again, like not every decision you make in a game is going to be.
But I only ask this because, and I'm not trying to dump on Kirby. He might be the best in-game coach in college football. I don't know. I also think his players are so good, and for the most part, are better than the opposing team. That sometimes it almost feels like that team is choke proof. If you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I just think this is why the question when we get to that
level. By the way, the answer is no one. I don't trust anyone more than Kirby Smart.
No, of course.
Like that's the ultimate answer.
Of course you don't. Of course you don't. And especially if you're thinking of it in a game against him. Like, if you're talking about Steve Sarkisian's Texas Longhorns playing Kirby Smart's Georgia Bulldogs, of course you trust Kirby more because he's done it over and over again, and he just did it again on Saturday. I think it gets a little bit more complicated when you start talking about some of these other coaches against each other. I think Kirby's the only one on this list that we have right here. Dabo's on it, so he's got one. But Kirby and Dabo are the only guys on this list that have actually done the thing, which is win the national championship.
And they've gone head-to-head quite a bunch.
But that's not
how that goes.
I think it has to be a little bit more nuanced than that, because you can't just say you don't trust someone because they haven't won a national championship, because no one in college football has won a national championship except for those two guys.
You brought up that Kirby made mistakes earlier that he learned from. There are guys on this list that are coaching top 10 teams that continue to make the same mistakes. Mm-hmm. That's a problem, especially when those mistakes cost you games against teams of liker, equal quality squad.
Yeah.
Like,
because to me, that's what it comes
down to. Dan Lanning tried.
Yeah.
He tried.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Against Ohio State, he tried. He cost that team points at the end of the first half.
Mm-hmm.
He tried.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Day tried harder.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Like, I mean,
to me, that's what it came down to. Like, not to minimize the efforts of the guys, because the guys went out there and played, and they played great. It was an incredible football game. But when it came to crunch time, and you have to be just meticulous about the attention to detail and know exactly what's happening at every second, because every second counts when you're trying to win a game on the road and it's a one-point
game,
and you don't know to call a timeout coming out of a penalty like that, and
the
quarterback loses track of the clock and slides down and ends the game, that's an entire operation failure in order for that to
happen. To Dan Lanning's credit, he runs a 12th man onto the field with some wonky idea.
If you believe that he did that on purpose, which I'm still not convinced that he did. But here's the thing.
He took credit for it.
Here's kind of how I'm looking at the trust meter. Because if you ask a fan of Oregon how much you trust Dan Lanning, right now, they would say they would argue that
comparatively to
they
what
trust
they've
him
had,
more than anything.
I would agree with that, by the way.
Dan Lanning is the best coach in the country that hasn't won a national championship.
Maybe, I might agree to that comment.
Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. But they're number one right now, they're undefeated, and that fan base believes it. Where does the general college football fan fall on Dan Lanning? I'm not sure. I think you're probably a better representative of that than me, because I'm very biased against them and him and all that sort of stuff. But I think the answer on Kirby is the same no matter who you ask. The answer on Ryan Day is different no matter who you ask. I think the general college football fan probably has a higher opinion of him than Ohio State fans do. I think Ohio State fans are down on him more than the average college football fan, and that happens a lot. Sometimes the folks that are too close to it are too close to it. Sometimes they're right, sometimes they're not. But I think that's an example of the people that are diehards of that program being more out on that guy than the general college football
fan. When you're too close to it, you're on one of two sides, right? You're either more critical than you should be or less critical than you should be.
You're extreme.
Very rarely as critical as you should be. I think Ryan Day deserves a lot of questions. A lot more than Dan Lanning, in my opinion. I feel like Ryan Day has had the best team in the country at least twice or in that discussion, and they've played for the national championship once and lost. I mean, Dan Lanning, I think, has overperformed thus far. Ryan Day has underperformed. The one who has performed as par is James Franklin.
Yeah. Because that's the thing. James Franklin,
he's never lost a game he shouldn't lose.
He takes a lot of heat.
Practically.
Right. He takes a lot of heat for not winning those big games, but almost every single time he's lost one of those big games, they're underdogs dramatically.
Are they ever better in that big game? They never walk in the better team.
Right. Right. They're never favored
until this year.
Now, sometimes you're allowed to win games when you're not favored, right?
No.
Like, you are allowed.
By the way, he did at Vanderbilt, which is what got him the job.
Yeah. And my one that I'm kind of interested in here is, because I think that one is going to be the same until he beats Ohio State. I think he'll probably beat Michigan this year. If he doesn't beat Michigan this year, then they have bigger problems. Because if you're supposed to be the third best team in the country, you should be able to beat a team that, you know, just lost to Washington and Illinois and other teams. Your school has a guy that just
total wild card.
I think you guys, I would assume you and fans of Indiana probably have a significantly higher opinion of him than the general college football fan does, just because the general college football fan doesn't even know who Kurt Cignetti is.
I don't know if I have an opinion. I think it's too early. Obviously, like, he's made a difference in the program. I've seen a number of first year coaches make a difference and then just settle to the norm. So we'll see where that goes. I don't know much about this past week against Nebraska was the first time that they, in my opinion, wildly outperformed the expectation. I mean, that should have been a close game. That was a game that scared you as an Indiana fan, and they blew them out.
I got a good answer on the squib kick, by the way. Was trying to kick a line drive to land around the 20. It was mishit. So
no, I figured they talked about that on the sideline. It was a mishit. The guy made a good play to get a paw up. But also, why? Like, just do what you've been doing and make them drive?
Yeah, that was my thought. Just pin them back and let the defense.
Why take any risk, any chance?
Take any yardage off the drive.
Still
didn't
college
make any
kickers.
Sense to me.
Cignetti's a total wild card.
He is.
You won't know. I mean, when will you know? Maybe home against Michigan. Don't trick that one off.
Yeah.
At Ohio State, I guess if you find a way to win that game.
If they beat Ohio State, then I think you'll really, really
know. But, like,
know.
If they lose that game and
then you still feel good about them,
here's the thing.
That's okay.
I will tell people this because a lot of people have not watched Indiana football. Mm-hmm. Indiana has traditionally, no matter how bad they are, played Ohio State incredibly tough.
It's true.
For three quarters. And then they give up a 21-0 fourth quarter, and it's a blowout.
The guy that has absolutely zero trust right now from his fan base is Kalen DeBoer.
Oh, I was going to say Marcus Freeman.
And him, too, although they've rebounded a little
after
losing that game. They only have one loss, and who knows? College football's crazy. If they keep winning, they could play their way back into the thing. Kalen DeBoer coming off of what felt like a validation win when they beat Georgia.
Right.
Has immediately followed it up with, I mean, the worst way you could possibly follow that up. They've lost 2 out of 3. Obviously, losing to Vanderbilt was bad. And then they lose again this past weekend to Tennessee. They've got Missouri this weekend, who isn't as good as some people thought they might be this year, but isn't bad.
That's a game they don't have to try that hard to lose,
though. That's the thing is, are they – Alabama's certainly more talented than them, but the way Alabama's playing
right
now –
Well, they're more talented in Tennessee and more talented in Vanderbilt.
I think that's right. I do think Tennessee's really talented.
I do,
like,
yes.
I think Tennessee deserves a lot of credit for the way that they play on defense and winning that football game.
I mean, it's unfair to say.
But
if Nick Saban's there, they don't lose that game.
Probably.
Like, that's an unfair comment. I guess, get that. But.
I guess probably. I don't know. Brandon Adams said that when we talked to him after the Alabama Georgia game. He goes, I know that Alabama won the game, but Nick Saban wouldn't have allowed it to ever be close if they got out to that lead. I don't know. I suppose that's probably true.
Can I give you one more wild card that I think we find out about this weekend, along with Kurt Cignetti a little bit?
Yeah.
Mike Elko still feels like a wild card there.
Yeah. Again, he's
Texas A&M.
It's early, and he's done well so far. So
it feels like the team's overachieving.
Yeah,
a little bit.
But I think he's going to get a little bit more leeway just because it's year one. Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly's the team they're playing, right?
Yeah, good game.
That is a good game. Where's your trust? I mean, you're a diehard LSU fan. Where are you at with Brian Kelly as far as your trust?
Well, we're going on what he's done in the past right now, so that has to be enough. I mean,
that wasn't convincing.
No, what has he hadn't done anything yet?
Right.
You had Jaden Daniels, who was, I mean, arguably the best rookie quarterback to come out of that class last year, as of right now.
Sure.
And two pretty good wide receivers over there, and didn't win anything with them. So, you know,
I'll tell you, I don't trust my coach. I haven't trusted a guy as little as I trust Jed Fish since Tyrone Willingham.
He's
probably
a lot of talk.
Yeah, man.
A lot of talk.
Not good.
And that could change this weekend at Bloomington with game day in attendance, though.
We're going to be 4-4 after we lose to the Hoosiers in front of everybody. Actually, not. Game day is in front of everybody. The game will be played on the Big Ten Network, which is fitting for that one. All right, we'll come back. We'll get to the back page with Bo after this on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, midday show with Andy and Randy with you here Tuesday afternoon. This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com, get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. Get back into the big story of the day coming up in about 20 minutes from right now. Brandon Adams is going to join us at 1:20 to talk some college football as well. Shout out to everybody that sent over the Kirby Smart quote from the weekend about that kick to start the second half. Here's a quote. They had a different alignment. That was not the planned kick. It was unfortunate. Peyton missed the ball a little bit, and we weren't trying to squib that. There you go. The answer that I sought was right there. The answer that I sought was right there straight in front of me.
Can I ask you about unplanned kicks? Were you watching Sunday Night Football?
Yes.
Was it Sunday night? Maybe, you know what? Maybe it was one of the afternoon games on Sunday.
Okay.
Did you see the onside kick that went 4 yards?
No, I didn't see that.
There was an onside kick. The kicker, after he obviously mishits it, just like they did here.
Wouldn't have been an onside kick in that Steelers-Jets game.
It would have been one of the afternoon games. Okay. Maybe it was
Raiders-Rams, maybe?
Maybe it was that. Maybe it was 49ers-Chiefs. Okay. I don't remember. The kicker, just hand on the helmet. Like, what have I done? Brutal. I was recording a podcast with Garrett at the time, and you could like go back to the podcast and see me start to crack up. We've seen it before where a kick doesn't go 10 yards.
Yeah, you just didn't quite.
Buck, it goes 4 yards right. And hits the ball hits a spiral spin.
Oh,
and
man.
It's just
so he tried to put all the English on it,
and it's spinning 4 yards from him. Yeah. The whole team's like, man, what are we supposed to do?
A perfectly hit onside kick really is one of the fun things to watch.
Well, we caught one last night. The first onside kick from Tampa took a low bounce and then the high bounce about 7 yards.
Yeah,
and it looped right over the first line of guys, and the smallest, I don't know who it was for the Bucks, tiny little fella, came and just snagged it.
I wonder what's harder.
Perfect kick.
Because there's a variety of ways to do it, right? Like you hit that one where you top it and it spins on the ground and then it pops up. You get that high kick. Or you get the one that they did in the South Carolina-Alabama game a couple weeks ago.
A little sidewinder.
Yeah, where he kind of just sliced it.
I call that the Harvest Moon, by the way. Crescent Moon or something.
They did one like, now that one was interesting because he kind of drop kicked it into that sidewinder. You had the one between the Falcons and the Cowboys a couple years ago where the kicker just put it on its side and then kicked it like that and it spun like a top and the Falcons players didn't know what to do with it. I mean, that would be. Randy was on the hands team for most of his career, which one he would probably say they all sucked to try to get because you know you're about to get destroyed as soon as you get the football. But anyway, onside kicks can be fun.
I'm going to find this one hit them correctly. And send you the video.
All right, let's get to the back page with Bo. Back page, Bo Johnson, every day at this time. Hello, Bo.
So, you know, I try my best not to toot my own horn. But let's talk for a minute about Saquon Barkley here, who you know, one fantasy football analyst here at 99 The Game had ranked right up there in the top of the freaking draft with Christian McCaffrey, Bijan Robinson, Breece Hall. I had Saquon right there. But Saquon's not only a pretty awesome football player, but he's also a great teammate. I think y'all brought this up yesterday. Well, I found the audio. Here's Nick Sirianni and Saquon Barkley on the sidelines on Sunday.
You're 13 yards away from your career high. I would love for you to get that. But that's up to you.
It's all good.
I'm going to take out all the starters if they don't score.
You good? Let them eat.
You sure?
Yeah, good.
You sure?
I promise.
I'll listen to me. I want you to do it if you want to do it.
It's all good. I'd rather see the young boys eat.
How about that? Could have eclipsed his career high, which may be bonus money. Who knows?
Maybe.
But, yeah, man, tearing it up on Sunday. What a great game for Saquon.
Yeah, that's awesome that he let the young guys get in there and get some shine as well. Is he the number one fantasy producer of the year thus far?
Him and Derrick Henry.
I would go with Derrick Henry.
Yeah. Is that?
Well, and Lamar. Yeah. I mean, are you talking about all?
I'm just talking about overall.
Who's got to be Lamar, right? Overall?
After five touchdowns, it probably is Lamar. Yeah. I'd have to go back and double check that. But yeah. So Saquon that had that awesome game on Sunday, it was in New York versus Giants.
It's Lamar.
Yeah. It usually is a quarterback. But Saquon or Derrick Henry are probably 1 and 2 as far as running backs point scores.
I can tell you. Lamar, Baker Mayfield are 1 and 2, and then Derrick Henry's number 1 as far as running backs go, and you got to scroll down at Saquon's number 2.
Yep.
Alvin Kamara's number three. Got to scroll further than that. I'm trying to find out.
He probably had a big lead,
Kyron
Kamara
Williams
did.
Because he did.
Last two weeks have been a little
game last week.
Jameer Gibbs is number five. There's Bijan. Bijan is the sixth most productive fantasy running back.
He's starting to pay off his draft.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, the last couple weeks have been really good.
So here's another one from Saquon. So I don't know. I got a couple clips here for you. Why are football fans so freaking angry? Like, the New York Giants had no chance. They didn't even want to keep Saquon. They weren't going to pay him. Why Giants fans got to be being stupid in the parking lot?
That was crazy. That was crazy. I mean, I've seen my jersey get burned before over on social media, but the timing of it, like, I'm locked in. I'm listening to my music. Yeah, that was definitely different. I don't know if I ever experienced anything like that in my life, and, you know, hopefully I don't experience that again. But
what happened? That
moment, I was ready for 3rd and 1. Let's just say that.
I don't know what happened.
His fans in the parking lot burning his jersey and then posting.
He makes it sound like they were burning it with him
right in front of him.
Of it. Like,
yeah.
Is that big of a mental blankety blank?
What,
like,
they,
just to see it burning?
I don't know. I guess did they send it to him on social media or something?
They're sending him posts directly to him. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to answer your big picture question, why are people so mad? I don't know. It does feel, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe it's always been like this, but it does feel like there's a level of anger involved with some of this that is more than usual. Like, we've been going to games for a long time. I don't remember seeing as, like, there's like a fist fight at every game.
There is.
Like every, and people now video it, and you put it online, and you get knocked out, and then everybody sees it, and that sucks. And
they arrested that Ravens cat. That knocked out the two Commanders.
He was just walking down the road, sucker punching people because the Ravens won a game.
They put out a warrant for his arrest, and he turned himself in. So.
Good.
Did he turn himself in? Good.
Yeah.
I was hoping they went to his house and broke his door down and dragged him out.
It does seem different. I don't know if it's more people are gambling, so there's money.
I feel like more people are drinking.
You think more people are drinking? I think people
I haven't
have been
seen any of those fights involve sober people.
No, you're probably
well,
right
they,
about that.
They never involve sober people.
Well, I mean, maybe the like victims.
I think
sober
maybe
person.
Just social media and people having cameras
I don't know
in their
what
pocket.
It, I don't know what it is, but it does seem like a level of anger that is in
it's
the stadium.
Probably already all,
that hasn't been
there
you saw
before.
The one at the Falcons game, right?
Which one? There
which
several.
Game? It's every week.
This was the one when they were doing, like, behind one of the interviews in the front row.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. It was two ladies, right?
Yeah,
I saw that.
Throwing.
I don't know.
So here's Anthony Richardson talking about angry Colts fans booing them, and they won.
I don't really try to pay attention to it, honestly. I heard them booing, but I didn't know who they were booing. No, yeah, it's just, you know, football, you know, the supporters in it. We know we got to execute, but you got to give them credit, too. They dialed it up and did a great job.
People
good answer.
These days.
Good answer. I don't know what to say. He didn't play very well, so I mean, I guess that's why they were booing him. They won the game though, so.
So maybe Anthony Richardson needs to take a page out of old Danger Russ's playbook on how to deal with adversity.
Okay.
You know, first of all, you know, I really believe in being neutral. You know, not being too high, not being too low. You know, my old mental coach who passed away a couple of years ago used to always say, you know, stay the course.
Not too high. Not too low.
He's been big on the neutral thing for a while, which is good. I mean, that's a good way to try to be, right? You can maintain a level of calm in all situations. It's impossible. You can't, but try to. Some of us better at it than others, I would say. But that's the
you think that's what he would have said?
The ultimate goal.
If he went out there and threw three interceptions and Justin Fields took the fourth quarter, you think that's what he would have said?
Probably.
Not too high, not too low.
Stay
the course.
Here's what I'll say about Russell Wilson and the narrative shift with him over the last couple of years. He's been saying the same stuff and doing the same stuff the whole time. He just played better, and it was in Seattle, so nobody cared. Then he got traded and got all that money and didn't play good. And then everyone started noticing. But Russell Wilson's been doing the same stuff for a really long time. He's been doing weird stuff for a really long time.
Yeah, he's been weird for a while.
But he used to throw 40 touchdowns a year, and he was in the Pro Bowl. And so no one cared. But, yeah, I mean, yes, I think he would have said the exact same thing. Because he's always said the same thing.
What's the better type of weird? Russell Wilson weird or Jameis Winston weird?
Jameis is...
Come on, as far as entertainment?
Jameis is a hell of a lot of
funnier.
Yeah, it's definitely
the best.
Yeah. It's definitely Jameis.
I don't think they're... I don't think
it's like creepily weird sometimes.
I don't think I've ever seeked out... Just moments from a backup.
We both did it.
More than Jameis.
Yeah, no, Jameis is hilarious. Every time he gets interviewed about anything, even we played about
off-season drills, just all of it.
Yeah, all of it. Remember when he would just be doing like his quarterback workouts and they'd just be like hitting him with a broom and stuff? What's he doing? I don't know. Jameis needs his own reality show.
Like, or something.
Or something. Like
reality show, podcast.
He's
all
a very unique.
Give me all the Jameis.
The thing about Jameis, though, that I love, I think that's just him. Like, he's genuinely like that. Like, Russ, I think, is different in different situations, which, again, is fine. It's made him a lot of money, and it's a tactic from a business perspective and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, no, they're both unique
so
individuals.
So the next person I have that was angry was Gerard Mayo. Deservingly so, they got shellacked in London on Sunday. Then he called his defense soft. Well, here's Bill Belichick standing up for those defensive players. And this is just hilarious.
I don't know. I feel bad for the defensive players on that one because those guys – that's a tough group. I mean, John Jones, Godshaw, Wise, Jennings, those are all the Uche. Those guys are all tough players. Like they'll strap it up and go. Duggar, yeah. I mean, they're tough guys.
Do what now, Bill?
Strap it on. Get out there. Let them have it. I was a little surprised to hear Gerard Mayo say that as well. Motivational tactic. I would assume, try to get the guys to play harder. But they're not a very good team. So, like, that's the thing about it is, like, you kind of knew that coming
into
it.
That's what's so odd to me about how he's approaching what's going on this year as a head coach. It's like, unless you were just misunderstood, you should have known. Like, it's one thing if the Falcons, well, never mind. But, you know, like, you knew what was headed your way. Why risk losing the team?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it'll motivate him. Maybe it'll get him fired up.
Or maybe it'll get him fired.
Not this year.
Not this year.
I think he's got some leeway.
Year one?
Antonio Pierce might be out.
Yes. I think that's a bit of a different situation, but yes, he may very well be.
He had a half of last year.
Did you see who they signed, by the way? The Raiders?
Yeah, I sure did.
Can't believe we didn't have this in what's
Dime
trending.
Dime store Dez.
Desmond Ridder. Las
He'll still
Vegas
be the
Raider.
Backup. He'll still be the
Bailey
backup.
Bailey Zappi just got another job, too.
There's a chance me and Randy's trip to Vegas just got more interesting. The Desmond Ridder revenge game?
Y'all should try to have Dez on the show.
That would be the first time. Literally never talked to him.
He's not a good interview.
I don't doubt it, but he was the starting quarterback for the team for a year. Never talked to him. That ought to tell you something. Normally, every other starting quarterback the Falcons have ever had, we've interviewed. Never talked to Dez. Other shows may have, but we didn't.
He was definitely on somewhere.
Probably was on somewhere. Every other guy we talked to, even backups we've talked to, but not
I think
him.
He was on. Was I working with John and Hugh?
I don't know.
Somehow I let them know about the DoorDashing, and now Freaky's obviously run with it.
It's funny. It's funny that he calls him that.
Aiden O'Connell being out. Dez should actually be the backup this
season. He is. Yeah, they got a rookie on their practice squad. Yeah. Desmond Ridder's going to be like the primary backup.
There it is.
So does Gardner get pulled for Dez at some point?
Probably.
I bet he does.
Yeah, that probably happens. Well, that probably happens at some point not too long from now. All right, we'll come back. We'll get to the big story of the day to kick off the 1 o'clock hour. Thanks for being with us. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.